It's in a demographic death spiral. And what this war has done is ended up killing huge numbers of Ukrainians. And furthermore, huge numbers of Ukrainians have left the country, and I would surmise that many of them will not return. So this is a disaster from a demographic point of view.
We just have 30 seconds, Professor.
Is if you look, Ukraine is going to end up as a dysfunctional rump state as well. And this is a disaster of great proportions.
What do you think in 15 seconds? How do you think this should end?
I think it should end with the Ukrainians doing everything they can to concede to the Russians and put an end to the war. I don't think they're going to get a better deal if they fight on.
10 seconds.
I think the best thing to do is cut it now.
I would agree. I wrote a piece with my colleague Rob Farley back in November for Foreign Policy magazine saying this was the time for the Ukrainians to get to make the best peace they can. Basically saying that if they can concede part of Ukraine that Russia now controls, they should do it. But the question is, will that really end the war? And the problem is we see no evidence that Putin is interested.
We have to leave it there. Matt Duss and Professor John Mearsheimer.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Our KBOO Out Loud fall membership drive is coming. Tune in August 20th, where we'll bring you testimonials, anecdotes, facts, and more, all day long to celebrate National Radio Day. KBOO, made by people like you, for people like you.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Neocony Coast Art and Music Cultural Foundation, presenting Rockaway Beach Music Festival and All Ages Music and Arts Festival in Rockaway Beach on August 16th and 17th. The event will feature live music, local food, art exhibits, and local craft vendors. More info at rbmusicfest.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News...
The Rockstar Energy Open is back in town.
Washington is suing Trump.
And the removal of traffic diverters has been put on pause. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 15th, 2025. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm David Chittenden. The state will likely lose $15 billion due to the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Oregon State Libraries facing losing almost a quarter of their funding. The State Library is a state agency in the executive branch. State Librarian Wendy Cornelsian describes the state library as a, quote, library for all the other libraries, providing information and resources for the other libraries. The state libraries run the Library for Braille, a government services library, and a library support division that consults all libraries across the state. There are over 1,600 libraries in Oregon. Some of these consulting services include working with school libraries, library board members, and serving to give business development consultations. The state libraries also provide online databases and access to journal articles, magazines, and homework help resources, which are there to help anyone in Oregon access information that would usually be behind a paywall. They also have a dedicated staff member who provides a wide variety of state resources through one-on-one support to school libraries across the state. They also run a courier system called SAGE, which runs between public libraries, school libraries, academic libraries, community college, and the state libraries. The state library pays for half of the cost of SAGE, local libraries pay for the rest. The federal funds currently being spent were granted into fiscal year 2025. These dollars will expire June 30th of 2026. If another solution is not found, the state libraries will have to significantly reduce their federally funded resources. This report was informed by Ronaldo Hernandez with Think Out Loud from OPB.
Palestinian author Sama Sabawi wrote a play which is currently being performed in Portland about a couple in a war zone. The play is about their decision to stay or go. If they stay, they risk being killed. If they go, they must make a perilous journey to the coast, risk sinking and drowning, and potentially ending up in a refugee camp indefinitely. Malek Najjar, professor of theater arts at the University of Oregon, received special authorization from the author to stage the play in Eugene in Portland. The play is meant to show refugees for what they really are, people faced with terrible choices to try to survive where they are or try to survive in another place, who are desperate for a better life. When Najjar reached out to author Sabawi to ask if he could stage the play, she responded that she would be honored to help, quote, opening hearts and cultivating empathy. Sabawi has lost tens of family members to the genocide in Gaza. She decided to write this play when she was living in Europe and neo-Nazi protests broke out outside her hotel window. The play's title, Them, refers to immigrants and refugees, people who have to leave their homes to survive somewhere else. A production of the play will run through August 23rd at Portland Center Stage's Ellen By Studio.
The removal of traffic diverters has been put on pause after major community pushback. Earlier this week, a plan to remove several traffic diverters in North Portland was announced. This decision came from a city leadership group that is gaining increasing controversy for its lack of accessibility despite its supposed open-door policy. The group is attended almost exclusively by city staff and business owners, frequented by Portland police and neighborhood association leaders. There is no agenda and no meeting notes from the so-called Problem Solver Network, but city administrator Michael Jordan announced that the decision had come after PPB had made the request, stating that they wanted to be able to navigate those intersections easier in order to hinder crime in the area. The community responded. They made their voice heard by attending the Bicycle Advisory Committee on Tuesday, saying those dividers make their community safer for those who are walking and biking. The meeting was attended by Mitch Green, Samir Kanal, and Tiffany Koyama Lane. The representative of the Problem Solver Network, who was supposed to speak, did not attend. City leadership put a pause on the diverter removal on Wednesday.
A grant called Connecting Kids to Coverage is helping to expand efforts to enroll eligible children and families in Medicaid. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
An Oregon nonprofit can now expand efforts to enroll eligible children and families in Medicaid thanks to a Connecting Kids to Coverage grant. The funding was awarded to 25 organizations across the country by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Liberty Avila with the Northwest Oregon Network, known as NEON, says they will use the funds to ensure babies are enrolled at birth and help families navigate Medicaid services in small communities.
We can really sit down, we can access the state systems, we can look at what's going on, we can call our partners and really smooth that way in a way that's really hard to do if you don't know the ins and outs of this work.
She says many people find it difficult to sign up for and use Medicaid or Marketplace benefits due to the program's complexity. She says people often have special circumstances like fluctuating incomes, mixed insurance coverage within families, and difficulty providing the required documentation. Avila adds people in rural Oregon often have to drive hours to get medical and other services and may not have reliable internet access. Being able to go to them, she says, is critical.
This grant will let us have the staff available to really travel out to those smaller towns and connect with those communities and build a relationship in those communities to be able to better serve them.
Experts say the process to enroll in and keep Medicaid will likely only get more complicated with new work requirements, more frequent eligibility checks, and funding cuts under the recently passed federal budget reconciliation law. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
The Rockstar Energy Open is back in town and will run from today until Sunday, August 17th in Waterfront Park, temporarily transforming it into a hub of skateboarding culture. This is the second annual Rockstar Energy Open, the first having been hosted in Portland as well. Last year, the event drew over 25,000 fans and featured over 100 skaters. The event will feature renowned athletes such as two-time Olympic gold medalist Keegan Palmer, Chris Joslin, and Laser Crawford. The event stays deep in the Pacific Northwest roots of skateboarding culture, combining it with a festival atmosphere. There will be several local skate shops, food trucks, exclusive merchandise, and music with your skateboarding competitions. The event is free and open to the public, with some upgrade options available for more enhanced experiences.
In national news, California's governor announces a mid-decade redistricting plan, and economists worry that inflation is rising due to Trump's tariffs. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We're giving the people of this state the power to save democracy, not just in California, but all across the United States of America.
California Governor Gavin Newsom is calling for a special election so voters can decide on whether to let the state redraw congressional maps mid-decade. Newsom's plan stems from Texas pushing new maps at the behest of President Donald Trump, which could cost Democrats 5 congressional seats. The Election Rigging Response Act would let California Democrats circumvent the state's independent map-drawing process and pass new congressional lines favoring their party. If the measure passes on November 4th, new maps would be done by the 2026 midterm elections. This comes after Texas Democrats are working on a plan to return home. Their quorum-breaking exodus has prevented the full Texas Statehouse from voting on its redistricting maps. However, their Republican colleagues have made it clear they will face severe penalties from arrest to financial repercussions for their actions. Meanwhile, a key economic indicator shows Trump's tariffs are hitting people's wallets harder than analysts predicted. The Producer Price Index shows grocery staples like fresh vegetables are up nearly 40% and milk costs rose 30% all in the last month. White House trade advisor Peter Navarro says tariffs aren't raising prices, even if most economists disagree.
What you want to see is whether the PPI numbers will move to the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, which is not always the case at all. We also know that the PPI is highly volatile.
Many economists say the PPI data suggest further price increases are coming for businesses and consumers. Since the tariffs have been enacted, they've raked in $29 billion for the U.S., but it's uncertain the impact this will have. Former OMB economist Vance Ginn, who served during the first Trump administration, notes there was a zero-tariff, zero-trade barrier policy. He says that's non-existent in the second administration.
Now, I don't hear a lot about that. It almost seems like these tariffs are going to be permanent. That's why they're trying to give tax rebates. That's why they're looking at other ways to either spend the money or send the money back.
Americans aren't happy with the tariffs or with the One Big Beautiful Bill. A new Pew Research Center poll shows 53% of people across party lines don't support Trump's economic agenda. While the economy was a crucial issue sweeping him back into office, 55% of Republicans don't support his economic plans. Tuesday marked the 90th anniversary of Social Security. Agency employees rallied nationwide to honor the program and draw attention to the impacts of federal layoffs. This comes as surveys show young people's confidence in Social Security is at a 15-year low, due in part to reports the program could be insolvent by 2034. Albany-based claims specialist Jessica Sweet, who doesn't speak on SSA's behalf, says seniors are dealing with mounting customer service delays.
They're calling or they're coming in needing help, and instead of solving their issues, we're forced to book them appointments 6, 8, 10 weeks out. Some offices are ending up with appointments double booked.
Answer rates are low, with about one-third of callers getting a recorded message and having their calls dropped. A Center on Budget Policy and Priorities report finds downsizing by the Department of Government Efficiency failed to accomplish its mission of streamlining Social Security's customer service work. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be raining with an overnight low of 66 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with a high of 77 degrees. Today in history, in 1947, the Indian Independence Movement, led by Mahatma Gandhi, achieved its goal as a free and independent India was established, ending nearly 200 years of British rule. The quote of the day is from Mahatma Gandhi, a lawyer, anti-colonial nationalist, and a political ethicist who led nonviolent resistance to free India from British rule, who said, quote, "A no uttered from the deepest conviction is better than a yes merely uttered to please or worse, to avoid trouble." End quote.
Buffalo Fire's Brian Bull joined almost 400 people who attended the 42nd Annual Indigenous Journalists Association Conference. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The 42nd Annual Indigenous Journalists Association Conference wraps up Friday in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Buffalo's Fire senior reporter Brian Bull reports.
Nearly 400 reporters, editors, and influencers assembled at the Isleta Resort and Casino this week. Congress's rescission and its effects on tribal radio stations were one new topic since last year, as were President Trump's cuts to federal programs and DEI initiatives. IJA President Christine Trudeau says there's been a lot to process, but her organization's mission remains the same.
We need to secure that there is a fourth estate that is upheld for transparency, for truth, for accuracy, for every citizen, for every human being. And that goes for federal level, and that goes for our tribal nations as well.
Trudeau wraps up her term as IGA president. A new board will be announced at the evening award ceremony and banquet. Trudeau says this is a full circle event.
It's been a real honor to be doing this and being a part of this. Right here in Albuquerque, I got my start. I was an intern at KUNM, and I was filing a story a week while I was finishing my undergrad at the Institute of American Indian Arts.
Among the ongoing challenges for Native journalists is getting free press established for tribal media. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Albuquerque.
Alaska's annual Salmon Fest is a three-day music festival that advocates for the protection of healthy salmon through song and educational resources. But it also highlights Alaska Native culture through workshops and demonstrations. KDLL's Hunter Morrison attended one teaching, Yupik Phrases, and has this story.
Between musical performances, Casey Jack takes the stage to introduce himself to an audience of about two dozen people.
I'll just say hi real quick. Maybe some of y'all have heard this.
The audience repeats the word back.
You know, you gotta kind of, you gotta bring that sound from the back of your throat. You gotta like, you know, like you're almost like clearing a spit. One more time.
Jack teaches the group other phrases, like how are you and where are you from, during the 20-minute Yupik beginner phrase session. The session is one of a handful at the music festival highlighting Alaska Native language and culture.
In general, Indigenous voices are important to be listening to.
The Yupik session was put together by an organizer who identified themselves as Foot.
I think that's kind of our duty as people who maybe are not from this land from time immemorial to respect and learn from the people who have been.
While the festival's main focus is the music and environmental message, Foot says Alaska Native people have been represented at Salmon Fest since its kickoff in 2011. Jack, who led this year's Yupik workshop, says demonstrations like the ones at Salmon Fest help keep Indigenous language and culture alive.
Language is intrinsic to identity, you know. You know, how can you be someone without your language? The language is the very vessel that you're using to pass down your values, your culture.
The workshop wasn't the first time Jack has taught his native language, but Jack has never held class at a music festival. Here's Foot, the coordinator.
It's called Salmon Fest, and salmon people and the stewards of this land are Alaska Native people. And so if you're sticking true to it being about salmon, it's probably also going to be about salmon people.
Foot says the festival's environmental advocacy is as much about the people who rely on healthy salmon as the fish themselves. Reporting from the Kenai Peninsula Fairgrounds in Nanilchik, I'm Hunter Morrison.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The U.S. Capitol just filed a suit to block Donald Trump's takeover of its police department. This move came hours after his administration named a federal official as the new emergency head of the unit. The District of Columbia Attorney General Brian Schwab sought an emergency restraining order in federal court, arguing the Trump administration is significantly exceeding a president's legal powers. Schwab said, quote, "The administration's unlawful actions are an affront to the dignity and autonomy of the 700,000 Americans who call D.C. home. This is the gravest threat to home rule that the district has ever faced, and we are fighting to stop it," end quote. The lawsuit follows an announcement by the administration's Attorney General Pam Bondi that Drug Enforcement Administration Chief Terry Cole will assume powers and duties vested in the District of Columbia Chief of Police. Bondi added the Metropolitan Police Department, quote, must receive approval from Commissioner Cole before issuing any orders, end quote. The role of the city's current police chief, Pamela Smith, who works for the mayor, was left unclear. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser wrote on social media, quote, there is no statute that conveys the district's personnel authority to a federal official, end quote. Schwab said late last night that Bondi's directive was unlawful and wrote in a memo, members of MPD should not follow orders of any official not appointed by the mayor.
The police takeover appears to be another move by Trump, testing the limits of his legal authority to carry out his agenda. He has frequently cited obscure statutes and relied on supposed states of emergency, particularly to increase desired mass deportations. Trump does have the power to take over federal law enforcement for 30 days before his actions must be reviewed by Congress. In this case, D.C.'s homicide rate ranks below those of several other major U.S. cities. The 800 Guard members who have been activated by Trump have participated in monument security, community safety patrols, and beautification efforts, according to the Pentagon. They might assist in traditional law enforcement roles like traffic and crowd control. National Guard troops have regularly been used in the past in D.C. for crowd control in and around metro stations. The Justice Department has declined to comment on the district's lawsuit when asked by media outlets.
National Security Minister of Israel Itamar Ben-Gvir went into the solitary confinement cell of Palestinian leader Marwan Barghouti. He threatened Barghouti, saying that he would obliterate all people who, quote, messes with the people of Israel. The video clip, posted on Ben-Gvir's X account, is the first time that Barghouti has been seen in years. Barghouti is 66. He was imprisoned over 20 years ago after being convicted of planning attacks that led to 5 civilians being killed. He was targeted because of his leadership role in the second Palestinian Antifada uprising around the turn of the century. He has been sentenced to life plus 40 years in prison. Ben-Gvir has a history of prisoner abuse and racism. Palestinian officials expressed deep concern about Barghouti's health, safety and health. Many Palestinians see Barghouti as the person who could best unify Palestine and negotiate peace with Israel. At least 32 people have been killed by Israeli attacks in Gaza on Thursday. 13 of these people were seeking aid. Since Friday morning, Israel has killed another 21 Palestinians, including 7 people seeking aid. A coalition of armed people in the Gaza Strip, the military wing of what is known as the Popular Resistance Committees, attacked a group of Israeli soldiers. Israeli strikes in Khan Yunis broke sewage lines, which created more of a crisis for doctors and nurses trying to navigate contaminated water and generators down. The UN reported that strikes across Gaza are hitting homes and tents, killing many Palestinians. The World Health Organization evacuated 38 patients and almost 100 companions. Doctors in Gaza are foregoing their only daily meal to feed their family. The meal, often just consisting of 200 grams of rice, amounting to about 250 calories. Israel has rejected a proposal for a 48-hour humanitarian pause in Gaza. Palestinian officials and Hamas representatives have agreed to the pause while discussing possible solutions in Egypt. Israel has refused to engage with this last round of negotiations. Yuval Abraham of Plus 972 magazine reported that Israel formed a quote-unquote legitimization cell after October 7th. The cell was created as a media tactic to bolster Israel's image and legitimize attacks of Palestinian journalists and civilians.
A new Gallup poll shows Americans are drinking less. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the story.
U.S. alcohol consumption has fallen to what might be its lowest level on record. That's according to a new Gallup poll just released yesterday. This comes amid amassing medical evidence and acceptance by Americans of the fact even moderate alcohol consumption is a health risk. A record high percentage of U.S. adults, 53%, say moderate drinking is bad for their health, up from 28% in 2015. That increase is largely driven by attitudes in young adults, the age group that is most likely to believe drinking one or two drinks a day can cause health hazards. However, older adults are also increasingly likely to think moderate drinking carries risks. And fewer Americans are reporting that they drink at all. The survey found only 54% of U.S. adults drink alcoholic beverages such as liquor, wine, or beer. That's lower than at any other point, at least in the past 3 decades. This all comes after decades of many believing that moderate drinking was harmless or even beneficial. Recent medical data suggests there is no safe level of alcohol consumption. That consumption, no matter how minimal, likely leads to a variety of adverse health outcomes, including a risk for a variety of cancers. In fact, earlier this year, the outgoing U.S. Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, recommended a label on bottles of beer, wine, and liquor that would clearly outline that risk. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, U.S. alcohol consumption was increasing, but that trend is reversing, particularly among teenagers and young adults. About 2/3 of 18 to 34-year-olds believe moderate drinking is unhealthy, according to the poll. That's up from about 40% in 2015. About half of Americans age 55 or older also believe this, but that's a substantial increase as well. In 2015, only about 2 in 10 adults age 55 or older thought alcohol consumption was harmful. In the past, moderate drinking, especially involving red wine, was thought to have some benefits. That theory came from imperfect studies that largely didn't include younger people and which could not prove cause and effect. Americans' drinking is definitely among the lowest since the question was first asked in 1939. For most of the last few decades, at least 6 in 10 Americans have reported drinking alcoholic beverages, only dipping below that point a few times in the poll's history. The federal government's current dietary guidelines recommend Americans not drink, or, if they do consume alcohol, men should limit themselves to 2 drinks a day or fewer, while women should stick to 1 or less. The government is expected to release new guidelines later this year, under the direction of Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has hinted at big changes. Kennedy has not said how the alcohol recommendations may shift. Overall, only about 1/4 of Americans who drink said they had consumed alcohol in the prior 24 hours, also a record low in the survey. Roughly 4 in 10 said that it had been more than a week since they had taken a drink. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The Global Glacier Casualty List honors ice giants that are melting away. The website marks the loss of glaciers to global warming. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
Way or will soon be gone. Users can see images of each. I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Last summer, a field in Iceland was transformed into a graveyard with headstones carved from ice. It memorialized not people, but glaciers that have melted as the climate warms.
The world loses 273 billion tons of glacial ice each year. That's a staggering figure. A lot of zeros, right?
But Dominic Boyer of Rice University says it's hard to grasp what the number represents. So he and fellow anthropology professor Simony Howe are helping to make the loss feel more personal using common rituals around death. Their team created the Glacier Graveyard. They held a funeral for a glacier, and they launched the Global Glacier Casualty List, a website where people can learn about dozens of glaciers that have melted away or will soon be gone. Users can see images of each one and read its story almost like an obituary written by people with a personal connection to the glacier.
For them, glaciers are not these abstract bodies of ice, but they are sources of water. They are sources of folktales and history and origin stories.
The team hopes that sharing these stories will help people connect to the loss and inspire climate action. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 15th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem and David Chittenden. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is also Hannah Francis. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Antonia Gonzalez, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and Edwin J. Vieira. The interim director of Evening News is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm David Chittenden. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for... It's Blink.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, in July of last year, I recalled a statement from Donald Trump on Fox and Friends in 2020 that if voting access were expanded, meaning the easing of barriers to voting for disabled and poor and rural and working people, if voting were made more widely accessible, he said, you'd never have a Republican elected in this country again. Many of us wondered at the time why news media wouldn't call that out as anti-democratic and maybe talk up the